Welcome to episode 75 of VFA Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language VFA Stuttgart fan podcast where our views are unofficial, uninformed, and usually unprepared. We were so unprepared last week for winning that we're kind of back to our old ways after this week. So Matt, you and I should be super prepared for this episode that you set off the air. It's going to be miserable.
I was trying to think all day today about what I would bring to this conversation, what sort of value I would have to add. And aside from they stink, I don't have much.
I know. You know, and real quick, as we do our introduction, though, I did find some fun number 36s. So this is your 36th episode on the pod. Here we go. Some ones that I've never seen, but we hear him almost every week. Sean Dundee wore the number 36. From 99 to 2002. We've got, I love the name. I don't know how to say it. Nunu Sarpe, who played for us for a second. He was somebody's kid. Luca Mack. Luca Mack, if you're watching this online, which is impossible, I don't know how you would since we don't post this. I have my Luca Mack jersey that's a German size large that I can't fit into because they're way athletic. And Lauren Ulrich, who's supposed to be the big next thing. Any of those guys... you remember any of them?
I remember Luca Mack from the video you posted of your excellent flagpole work snagging the jersey. Well done on that again.
Still celebrating.
As you should be. That was some A-plus dad maneuvering there. The one that sparks the most joy for me, I guess, is Sean Dundee, because we get to hear him commentate pretty regularly. And I think he's a solid color commentator, usually brings some good information about Stuttgart history and their place in the league and historical place in the world. And I enjoy some Sean Dundee time in my ears.
Yeah, unfortunately, Sean had to sit through the game just like we did, as he was the color analyst for the match this week. So, Sean, shout out to you and apologies. Boy, all right. There you go. That's your intro. How do you like that?
Perfect.
Let's move into part one, some shout outs. First off, let's get the OFC official fan club stuff out of the way. Tippspiel winner. Hey, Matt, congratulate me. I won this week on Tippspiel. So there you
Bravo,
go.
Bravo, sir.
Thank you. Doug and Steven are still in the lead on that one. Fantasy winner, Village Footy won. They do a great fantasy football program. So if you get a chance, give them a listen. But Jens is still in the lead, 200 points ahead. VFA bingo almost won, Matt. We had a Jurgen Klinsmann comment. We had a firefighter comment, a Hube Stevens, Borna to buyer rumor. We were missing Mario Gomez comment. So we almost got it, but not quite there. Shout out to the Cologne supporters who are wrapping up their trip overseas. They looked like some great times, some great pictures. They didn't see a lot of great results for their club, but still, you know, watching them over there has got to be great. Any shout-outs on your end you want to throw out there?
I'm going to give ESPN Plus a shout-out for showing us the same commercial on a loop pregame and for multiple times having connections just freeze up. I was on the Reddit Discord and on the OFC Discord, and in both places people were complaining that ESPN Plus was randomly going, which, I mean... maybe somebody from ESPN was also watching that game and thinking, let me put these suckers out of their misery.
The halftime ESPN show was the top five goals for both Schalke and for VFA. And it was interesting. I'm going to do a little shout out to my wife. Is during the halftime, they were showing goals, and one of them was Jurgen Klinsmann from 1987, I believe. And she's like, is that the last time they scored a goal? And I was like, huh.
Ouch.
Well done, honey. So hurtful there.
Well that's played, Kim, but that's some brutal cold stuff there.
Yeah, it's a rough spot here at the old Travis house right now. So let's move into part two and talk about something even rougher, and that was the match.
Oof.
All right, Matt, so we were both optimistic going into this. I think you said it perfectly, is you didn't think they could get a result against a team that was going to play super defensive in terms of 3 points, but you thought we would at least get 1 point in this match. When we did our predictions, I took Schalke plus half a goal because I thought we would get a 0-0 result here, a 1-1 result, something like that. I honestly didn't envision the game shaping up the way that it shaped up. And we'll get into that much more later. But we were both pretty confident going into it. And then as soon as the match started, that confidence, well, as soon as we were able to watch the match after ESPN Plus let us, that confidence disappeared. Did you see the same thing I did? Because I was feeling okay going into it. But once the ball started to cross the halfway line, I was like, oh gosh, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I fired that game up thinking this is going to be a nice, relaxing watch here. We're going to have some interesting stuff happen. It's not going to be too much excitement. And at the end of it, we should come away with a victory. And boy, was I brought to earth fast.
Yeah, the lineup was exactly the same as prior week, which made 100% sense, I guess. But we'll get into that a little bit later. There were some different substitutions, though. So we saw Tomas was back in the lineup, which was great to see. Tomas Castaneras, Chestnut McCaw was back, which is great to see. But Enzo Below was out, and Stenzel was out. Now, Stenzel injured himself last match. This Enzo Below thing is just becoming more and more bizarre to me. He was good enough to be in the lineup last week. He wasn't – or in the squad last week, and to get some playing time last week. He had one or two good chances last week, but he wasn't good enough to be in the squad this week. And I don't know – is this just another case of training? He's not showing it every week. I don't know what's going on with this guy. I don't know what's going on with Bruno. Before we get into the match, any thoughts on the lineup or who the substitution patterns were?
I like the lineup. As I posted on Twitter, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I thought the lineup worked out well last week, so it made sense that we would bring it back out. The substitutions were really confusing to me. Bringing Koulibaly on for Diaz, who had been one of our most dangerous forwards, and Koulibaly, who is himself. Zagadou on for Ito, I did not get. Wagnermann on for Anton made perfect sense. Wagnermann's actually a right back.
Whoa, like, slow down. What?
What a novel concept. Tomas, I love Thiago Tomas. I don't get swapping him out for Haraguchi. That doesn't seem like a one-for-one fit. Tomas is more of a forward. And then Luca Pfeiffer, I'm not sure why we're bringing him on at all anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that later when we get into good cop, bad cop, worse cop, and maybe get rid of the good cop. Yeah, the lineup I thought made sense initially, but I'll get into this later why I think Silas being up front didn't actually make sense against the Schalke club. I am with you on Luca Pfeiffer. The poor guy, I mean – the way things are trending, he's going to be a big part of our club next year because we'll be in the second league, and that seems to be where his, you know, his expertise is. But when they brought him on, it's bizarre. He reminds me of a big man in the NBA who plays small, a guy who can't really rebound or can't put his back to the ball, but he can shoot from the outside, I guess. He doesn't fit the mold of what I think his body type and his physicality looks like. He looks like a classic number nine, and he is anything but that. So that was really bizarre. And then the match, I'm going to throw out a quote from Fabian Bredlow, who actually is one of the few that played okay this match. So the match gets going. We're immediately down 2-0. Fabio Bredlow, among others, said, listen, he struggled with how Stuttgart played. And he said, like everybody said, we had a good win against Cologne the week before. We came into this match with a, quote, broad chest. We were confident. Quote, it's extremely difficult to explain. Right after the final whistle, I was thinking about how what happened in the first half could have happened. We missed things in every area that we didn't do last weekend. Volgemuth, the director of sport, came out and said pretty much the same thing. We've been working on this a long time. It's not a level of quality. It's a level of mentality. He had a really bad quote to where he said we were surprised at what Schalke brought to the table. And he tried to step back from that the next day and say, well, I think we were surprised not by what they brought. We knew what they were going to bring, but maybe the moment got to us. And he had a bit of Alexander Werl foot in his mouth, I think, where he maybe said the wrong thing. Felix Arnold, who writes a lot of things for Bild, the German newspaper, and he does a lot of things on Twitter, said the same thing. He's like, I've been following this club for 3 years and I just don't get it. Danny Gom, who writes for ZVW, said the same thing. He just doesn't understand how they can't go into a relegation six-pointer and have that kind of start to the match. Dirk Price, who writes for the Stuttgarter Zeitung, I'm sure he said the same thing. I can't afford it to pay for the paywall anymore. So, Dirk, I'm just going to assume you said that because it seemed to be the common refrain from everybody. I just read an article from Vertical Pass. I read an article from around Den Brunstring. They're all saying, how do these guys not get it? I put something on the Reddit page about, I don't understand, whether it's Pellegrino, whether it's Vimmer, whether it's Bruno. It's been the same thing all the time where these guys go into a match and the moment gets to them, they don't start strong. They always finish strong. I don't know what's going on. I mean, there's a lot here that we can break down and we will in a minute, but what are your comments or your thoughts on the fact it seems like everybody was up for this match except for the 11 guys on the pitch? I'm going to throw Bruno in there too. He said he didn't know what happened. Well, you're the coach. You got to know what happened.
It's his job to make sure that the guys show up, are ready, and are set up for success. Beyond that, there's not a whole lot he can do. Of all the sports, the major sports out there that people watch a lot of, soccer is kind of unique in that there isn't a lot. Once the ball starts moving, there's not a ton the coach can do to alter the flow of things. But that means you just got to have your players that much more prepared. And you have to have your on-field generals be your on-field generals. And I don't know what's going on, but we came out last week against a Köln team that by all rights should have kicked us in the teeth. And we took it to them like we were world beaters. Mm-hmm. And then we showed up against a Schalke team that had no business hanging with us. And they kicked us right in the pants. And I don't, the mentality thing makes total sense. Why that continues to be a problem at a quote unquote big club like Stuttgart, I have no idea.
It is one of the most inconsistent, consistent things that this club has had since you and I have been following them. And it was funny, Felix Arnold for Bild got some blowback on Twitter because he said, listen, I've been following this club for Bild for a year and a half and for another newspaper for a year and a half prior to that. And I just don't understand what's happening. And a lot of people said, listen, I've been following this club for 20, 30 years. This is what we do. So it's not like this is anything new. So it was a little weird. I wish when the broadcast was over, they would have stayed and focused on the crowd a little bit more, because you and I have talked about this multiple times since Pellegrino was gone and Sven was gone, that the crowd, the support is turning a little bit. And you heard the whistles as the guys went to the traveling support, over 5,000 of them, by the way. You heard it. You heard the whistle. And you can always tell how things are going a little rough when the guys go to the curve, but they don't go real close to the away curve. And then you'll always see a coach or a player kind of push the guys towards there because they don't want to go. We're hearing more and more whistles. And yeah. I don't blame anybody, especially if you travel that far to see that performance, especially in the first half. I mean, yeesh.
It's starting to remind me of the Marshawn Lynch Super Bowl, I'm just here so I don't get fined. Like, the players are going over to the away section because they know that that's what's expected of them, but they don't want to be there, and they're only going to go as far as they absolutely have to.
Yeah. You know, let's end this segment with some positive news, because you and I talked off the air. We took a vow of positivity, and that vow is being tested. It is being put to the limit here. The other matches this weekend sort of went our way. Our friend Pellegrino struggled yet again at Dortmund. I watched that match, though. It was Hoffenheim could have gotten a draw out of that. They didn't play poorly. Dortmund did what Dortmund did. You know, they barely held on. They got the win. Unfortunately for us, Hertha got the win versus Augsburg. But initially, I was happy because I thought, okay, Augsburg is being brought back into the fray a little bit. Unfortunately, Hertha jumped us. Bremen did their job and beat up on Bochum at least, so we got that. So Schalke is still in 18th. 3 points behind us. Bochum is behind us on goal difference. Hoffenheim is behind us on goal difference. We're in 15th, you know, with 19 points. So you got three clubs with 19 points, but we're up there on goal difference. Hertha is 1 point ahead of us, and now Augsburg is in our first place with 24 points. There was no man of the match this week. The votes were all tied. Everybody got about two votes. So I think it was either between Endo, Bredlow, or Sosa. Do we give a three-way tie for that? Do we?
I think we give it to Fritzl for showing up and not eating anybody.
Poor Fritzl. Well, Matt and I went through that super fast because what we want to do in our next segment is go through some good cop, bad cop, and we'll break down the match a little bit more. So, Matt, do you want to be good cop, bad cop, worst cop, RoboCop? Which cop do you want to be?
Ooh, RoboCop. Sign me up. Detroit's own.
Such a great movie.
Underrated for sure.
Okay, so here we are in part three. I do remember the first RoboCop, though. Weren't there like seven or eight of them after that?
There are three that I'm aware of. Would not surprise me at all to hear that there was a bunch of straight-to-DVD releases probably floating around on YouTube now.
Where are you now? I wonder where he is now. Because the joke here was it was always – that wasn't filmed in future Detroit. That was filmed in modern-day Detroit.
I mean, living less than an hour down the road from modern day Detroit. Yeah.
Wasn't too bad. Oh, man. Anything we can do to avoid talking about this club, I think we should keep doing right now.
So, do you know the dad from that 70s show is the bad guy in RoboCop?
Oh, I remember that. You know what? Join us in part 7 where Matt and Travis break down RoboCop 3. Well, we've got to do it, so let's do it. So I want to work backwards, actually. So let's work from the attack all the way up to the president of the club. So let's start with the attack. So we've got Chris Furich, we've got Silas, we got Diaz, Koulibaly, Luca, and Tomas. You and I talked off the air and on the air is that who wants to be good cop, bad cop? And I don't think the good cop showed up today. This is going to be rough here. I'm not done with the Chris Furich bull in the China shop move because he is one of our more talented players and he does make things happen, but it's a different level of frustration that I have with him that I've had with Koulibaly in the past. For example, it's just, you are the one that actually drew my attention to it. He puts his head down and he goes. And he's going to shoot the ball come hell or high water. And once in a while, he's going to make that 2% shot. But once more often than not, he's going to leave a guy who would have a better shot without that shot. I know we're stuck with him. I know he's a good player. I know he's got pace. But man, oh man. The Phil Forster, Chris Furich thing is starting to become more of a thing with me. So let's start with Chris. What are your thoughts on Chris? Or do you want to take any of the other attacking players and just have a moment?
Furich is the one that got to me the most. And comparing him to Forster, that hurts me deep in my soul somewhere. Yeah, you're 100% right. And there was a great example. The ball that Furich had near the middle of the box, he put about 10 feet up over the bar. He makes good runs. He gets himself into dangerous positions.
Yes.
He creates problems for the defense. Once that ball gets on his feet, he commits a sin that I spent a lot of time with young hockey players when I was coaching, trying to break them of. Head goes immediately down and you're staring at the puck, or in his case at the ball, and he misses opportunities. And there was a still that I saw on Twitter of Furich right near the penalty spot getting ready to kick, and Silas is wide open, doesn't have anybody within 5 meters of him, with his arms down in front of him of put the ball here. And I couldn't tell who the other player was, but there's another guy who is about 6 feet away from Silas who also had a beautiful wide open look at the net. The goalie had overcommitted to Furich because why wouldn't you? He's right. Going to shoot. And if he makes that pass, it's an easy opportunity for Silas to put it over the bar and break our hearts in a different way. But he didn't even give us that opportunity, because when the ball had gotten to him, he had decided where he was going to go to and what he was going to do when he got there. And it didn't matter what changed about the situation. And it's so incredibly frustrating to see a guy generate opportunities, generate chances, and then it's like the controller disconnects on a game of FIFA and the player just goes on autopilot.
It's like watching an NFL team that's really great between the 20s, but then once you get into what is known as a red zone, they can't do anything because they run out of ideas or whatever. I'm gonna have a hot take, as the kids say. You know, I've been hanging out with a lot of kids lately, Matt, which
that sounds probably dangerous.
I will probably edit that out. But my hot take, I don't like to make hot takes because you're often proven wrong, and that's not usually what we do on the show. I think we are going to regret the Silas extension. He has just, since the knee injury, Sean Dundee mentioned it, that he is just not the same player. You've mentioned about knee injuries in the past because you had, you know, one when you were a player. It takes a long time to get back from that. And when Silas had that Boca match where he had the two goals and could have gotten a hat trick, we all thought he had gotten past that. He looked like he was scuffing. Now, as good as he looked against Cologne, and I'm going to get into why I think he looked good against Cologne and why he didn't look so good against Schalke, but he looked awful. I was surprised he didn't get subbed off at half, but then I was like, well, who the heck else are we going to put in with him? Silas, to me, is just, he has never recovered from that knee injury. And I think we have so many hopes and dreams wrapped up in this guy, and it's just not happening.
Yeah, he's been super disappointing. And your hot take, when you dropped that on me on Saturday, I have been thinking about that more than I care to admit. And the more I think about it, the less of a hot take I think it is. I think in a year or two, he's going to be that guy on the bench, and fans are going to be going, what's his deal again? Why is he here? And, you know, we'll be the crusty old guys. That, well, back in the day when he was known as Wamangatuka, you know, it's a great story. And by all accounts, he's a lovely human being. But he does seem to have lost his edge. And Sean's right, man. It's a mental block to get over trusting that your knee is going to do what you want it to do. And I don't know if he's there.
I want to move on a little bit to some of the other attacking guys, but I'm not going to talk about, you know, all of them here. We've already talked about Luca. I think Thiago has stagnated. We're definitely not going to keep him after this year because it's somewhere around 13, 15 million. Here's how crazy things are. Koulibaly comes on in the second half, and at this point, people are calling for him to start over Silas. To me, this is nothing against birthday boy Koulibaly. And he looked actually good on Saturday. He was one of the few.
Yeah, he did all right.
But that's where we're at right now, Matt. A guy that we were all like, you know what? I'm okay if this guy leaves. In fact, you and I said it like two podcasts ago. A guy that Bruno put on the bench that got kicked out of practice, he is now the guy we're like, yes, he can be our savior. No offense to Koulibaly. But if this is where we're at in the attack, oh my God. We're in so much trouble.
If we're relying on Coolio to be our savior, we are in deep, deep trouble.
I don't get it.
I feel like he's a guy that could be a good complementary piece on a good team. And we're not a good team, but still.
Yeah, Silas looked better when he moved to the right. You know, once you took him out of that striker position, he looked better when he moved to the right. Koulibaly, you know, took over, I believe, for Dias, I think. But it was just, that's how weak and toothless we are up there. Let's get to the midfield for a little bit. Endo, Ana, Haraguchi. Haraguchi looks like the best midfielder. Now, Endo had some good opportunities, but Haraguchi looks like the best midfielder, and I don't think that's a compliment to our midfield. And I don't mean that Haraguchi's a bad player, but he's only been here for 2 days, and he's already the guy that you're like, oh, wow, he's making some nice hockey assists, I think. I don't think he's ever going to show up on the stat sheet. I don't think that's fair to him, but I think he makes that nice pass that eventually leads to a nice You play. I've been very happily surprised with him. I will play somewhat good cop here. I don't think the midfield is our problem. I think our midfield is very restricted. I don't think Haraguchi is an offensive force. Odakarazar is definitely not an offensive force. Somebody mentioned on Twitter that if Endo is the guy who's getting all your headers in the box, and Endo has some hops, that's probably not a great sign. So I don't have a lot of negativity to throw at the midfield, but the offense isn't, especially since Amada left, isn't going to come from the midfield.
No, and the midfield was definitely not our problem in this game. And Haraguchi has kind of taken over the Mangala role of get the ball to this dude and he'll turn it upfield and make something happen. And I really wish they tracked hockey assists in soccer. I think it's a useful stat to have, even if it was its own stat, like secondary assist. That's really useful to know who's generating the offensive pressure and helping out in transition. So Haraguchi's fine. Endo was our best attacker, which says a lot about our attackers, and way more about our attackers than it does about Endo. Carrizor did something that I thought was really interesting. He won like 80-some% of his tackles. And they put up a stat during the second half that he was at like 100% on his pass rate.
Whoa.
I think Carrizor very quietly had a very good day. And that's one of those positions that defensive mid, we've talked about it with center backs before, that if nobody notices you're out there, you're having a good day because you're not screwing up. And I don't think he screwed up much. And he had a pretty good day. And that I was pleasantly surprised with that. I've not been a big Carrizor cheerleader and was kind of wondering why he was in that role over Endo, but he held his own. And yeah, the midfield's not the issue.
Yeah, before we take a little break here, I do want to get into the kind of the midfield and the Carrizor thing a little bit. Is that it just seems, is it maybe that there's a gap between what they're doing? Because when Bruno first took over, the big criticism was that there was huge gaps between the defense and the offense, and that they just couldn't connect because those gaps were so enormous. I mean, I do agree with you. I think the midfield is the least of our worries right now, but I do also think they're kind of caught in this weird no man's land. And Valdemar Anton, I think, is a perfect example of this, which we'll get to in a minute. I still think Endo is a better defensive player. Odakarazor is definitely a defensive player. I think Haraguchi is more that offensive as hockey assist guy. I almost feel like they're being dragged into two spots and they can't excel at either spot.
Yeah, it looks a lot like they're being asked to play two positions at the same time. And that's not going to end well. And when you're relying on Endo and Haraguchi to both be transitional, move the ball from the defense to the offense guys and be your offense, that's not good.
No, it's not good. Speaking of not good, Matt, we need to take a brief break. And usually what we try to do is we try to pretend that the segment continues, but we're about to talk about the defense and this is going to take us a minute. So I'm going to go refill my glass of whatever I'm having right now. And, you know, it's a good thing we don't have a YouTube. Oh, I wanted to show you this, Matt. Now the listeners can't see this, but what do I'm showing you right now. Do you,
it's a Stuttgart candle,
right? But because this is 2023.
Oh, it's an electric candle and it looks like it lights up in a brewstring and not classic candle flame. I love that.
Yeah. This is like so suburban America. I have a candle that is electric with a remote control, mind you. So,
I refuse to tell you how many of those we have in my house right now.
All right, everybody, make sure you join us in our next part where Matt and I go through different electric devices that we have sitting around our house and RoboCop 4.
Yes.
All Okay, Matt, we had to take a little bit of a break because we're about to get into the nitty-gritty of our good cop, bad cop here. And let's pick up where we left off. We're going to run to the defense. So we got Sosa, Ito, Dino, and Anton, our back four. So we can throw Zagadou and Vagnamon because they both got into the match. I'm going to take another hot take moment here. Our defense blows. So there you go. Every single corner kick is a gut-wrenching moment. I don't get it. I honestly believe this, that these all four of those guys that are starting could be starters for a lot of other clubs in the Bundesliga, but our defense is awful. Borna is terrible at tracking back. He played a role in both of the goals that Schalke scored. Ito's long balls, I agree with you. When Zagadou came into the match, I was like, what is happening? But Hiroki Ito's long balls were awful that match. And he's been really good at doing some kind of changing the direction of the pitch, but his long balls were just awful. I mean, Zagadou is going to be awesome in the second league because the dude is just an enormous presence. Here's something that nobody's been talking about is that, did you know that Valdemar Anton's been playing a right back lately?
What's this?
Right. So we will be the first to break this story. He had his worst match in a long time. He was so bad, he got subbed out by Bruno, who has been telling all of us that he is learning this position. Vagnamon came on and played okay, like you said. But the fact that we spent $3 million on this guy who doesn't fit into whatever system we particularly run now, that's another just wasted position. So our defense is so bad. I can't play good cop on this at all. It's those two goals that they gave up. My goodness. So I threw a lot of names at you, mostly a lot of angst at you. What are your thoughts on the defense? Is there some saving grace here, or is it just, yikes, we're in trouble?
Do you remember the old cartoon from the 90s, The Critic? And every movie he saw, he would wind up with, "It stinks." That's all I can think of with this defense. And it, like, Dino, we're on the Dino hype train, and we've been on the Ito hype train for a while. Both of those guys had, without question, their worst games that they've had in a long time on Saturday. And it, I don't know what the explanation is. And all the progress we saw last week from Anton, of starting to be in the right place and starting to track back and not looking lost as much, completely out the window. He looked more lost against Schalke than he had in any of the previous three matches. And I kind of feel for Sosa because he's being asked to carry a big load on the offense and being asked to do a lot on the defense. And he's one very small Croatian. We can only ask so much of this dude. Not that Croatians can't do a lot or that small people can't do a lot, but that's just how much we are asking him to do.
You offended half our audience right there.
I haven't seen the metrics. Do we have a lot of small Croatians in the audience?
Oh my gosh. No wonder we don't have a sponsor.
Dang it. So Sosa, we love Sosa. We love Dino. We love Ito. All three of them had terrible games at the same time, and we are not a good enough group to suffer anybody having that bad of a game at once, and for all four of our back defenders to have terrible games on the same day, it was doomed from the drop.
It was bizarre because you watched Schalke play long ball, and those guys knew how to hit a long ball, to kick it up, to kick it so it lands somewhere in that, you know, between somewhere in the middle third to the final third, you know, so your guys can get it. Our guys had no clue how to do that. I'm convinced they didn't. They were kicking it out of bounds. They were kicking it towards the goal. Silas, who has pace, and Virtue has pace, couldn't get to these balls. Then, and it was super frustrating in the second half when we actually did start to play a little bit better. We were continuing to do that. And, you know, at the 80 minute mark, it suddenly takes them, you know, the goalie, you know, a minute to get the ball out of the back of the wall. And you're just like, it seemed like and this goes to something I'm going to talk about later. It's like, we're just not built for this. These guys don't know how to play like that. And it was, It was really difficult because Borna Sosa is pretty much our offense. If Borna is on the field, I feel like we have a chance. And
yeah,
with his crosses and his play, I just feel like we have a chance. For him to play as bad as he did on defense, but that's not – you mentioned it, I think, earlier, is that he's not a very good defensive left back. It's really bizarre. And I think that's one of the reasons we haven't been able to unload him. Thank goodness we haven't, for much money, is because I think he plays a super particular position. He's more of this left wing back where he has guys in the defensive area that can cover for him because his defense has never been his forte. And I don't think there's a lot of clubs that play like a Reno 3-5-2 or whatever that can make up for it. Now, he's played in a 4-4-2 before. He even did that under Pellegrino. But I think he's always had people that have helped cover for him. Having him try to play defense and offense and then having Valdi try to do the same thing on either side, you can just pick your poison if you're the other team as to which side you want to attack.
Yeah, and if he's kind of ideally suited for a system that's three at the back, where he's a hybrid defender midfielder sent to bomb down the field and put huge crosses in. That's his wheelhouse, and that's not what we're doing. And he can still do that if the two center backs are solid, and our two center backs were not solid. And especially having Carrizo there as a safety valve,
right,
that he can free up Ito or Dino to go off to the sides a little more and he can fill back in. So I get how it makes sense, but it wasn't working because Ito was having a crap game, Dino was having a crap game, and nobody seemed to know what anybody else was doing out there. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing that you need on defense is good communication. And you almost have to have this like telepathic sense of where your partner is going to be at all times. And nobody had any idea where anybody was.
No. And everybody's talking about Anton at right back, and it looked like he was being in progress, and he had one of his worst matches in a long time on that side. And it's just the offense just, it stagnates whenever it is at his foot. And that's not his fault. That's not his position. I do want to say Zagadou didn't look bad when he came in. I mean, we ripped on him a lot the previous weeks. He actually held his own. He looked pretty good. I could see him starting next week just because Borna Sosa is going to be out because of the yellows, but it's Bayern, so whatever. Vagnamon didn't look bad when he came in. So, I mean, maybe there's something there. Bruno pulled Anton to put Vagnamon in. So maybe – you know, he's seen some of the writing on the wall. So there was some positive there. And one of the positives, I don't have anything negative to say about the goalkeeping. Bredelow let in two goals. I don't think either were his fault. But I do think Schalke could have scored more than two. That was what was so frustrating about this match, is that we played a team that hadn't scored a goal in four matches and it only scored one goal in eight matches. And at halftime, we were lucky to only be down 2-0.
Yeah.
Finally, Bredelow didn't make any major mistakes. And I'm not saying he is the future. And if we somehow stay in the Bundesliga, we need a new number one. I don't think it's Fabian Bredelow. I don't think it's Florian Mueller, but I don't have anything bad cop to say about Fabian. He made the saves when he had. I thought Schalke had some good opportunities. He was able to keep out of Sean Dundee mentioned a lot of them right at him, but we've seen shots right at our goalkeeper go in before. So nothing bad for me.
He made some saves that are routine saves that you need a keeper to make, that we expect keepers to make, but that we've seen Florian Mueller not make. And so for Bredelow to make the saves that can reasonably be expected of him to make, and to not make saves where you go, yeah, it was a defensive breakdown, that's fine. And if that's the best we get out of him, that's fine. That should be fine for us. We're not playing Champions League football. We don't need Manuel Neuer back in net. But I mean, I wouldn't wouldn't say no to Manuel Neuer, and that right now might make a big difference.
Hot take. Like, Matt says Manuel Neuer can't start for Stuttgart.
Well, right now he can't start for anybody.
Ooh, wow.
He's
I'm
out,
going to
he's out hurt. Broke
league part. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's my take. Write it down. Neuer can't start for anybody. Right now, that guy can't set foot on a pitch in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, that's right.
So Bredlow was fine. And I do want to take just a second to compliment Schalke. That second goal, holy crap.
Yeah.
The back heel just kind of flipped, and there was nothing anybody was doing about that. Sosa should have been better to prevent the pass across. Ito should have been better on the man in the middle, but there wasn't much that could be done there. That was a dandy.
I think Borna and Bruno both said is like 99 times out of 100. Yeah, we made some defensive lapses, but that shot doesn't go in. That was one. And yeah, I mean, I think when that shot went in, just the back heel, you're like, okay, it's not going to be our day. But talking about Bruno, I mean, his job is to get results, right? We've got one win in 7 matches. Just give up.
How's he doing with that?
Just give pretty great. The Bruno bounce, as we call it. Just gave up 2 goals to a team that hadn't scored in forever. Here's the thing that's bizarre is we can break Bruno up into defensive play, offensive play, lineups. The defensive play of this team is not good. And we talked about this a couple episodes ago that Bruno was sold to us as a guy who's going to stabilize the defense. It's not in any way, shape, or form stabilized. The goals that this team has scored have all been individual quality goals. It's not like it's part of a system. If you look at the Cologne match, they were all individual quality goals. The same thing happened here. Borna Sosa scored a goal, not because of the system, but because of his individual play, and the goalie for Schalke made a mistake. So his offense is nothing to write home about. The moves that Bruno is making reek of desperation. The move from Florian to Fabian, the multiple substitutions in the second half. Now, I'm not saying I wouldn't have made those same moves if I was coaching this team on FIFA or whatever, but I'm not getting a sense of calm. I'm not getting a sense of stability. I'm not getting a sense of this is a guy who is a firefighter who knows what he's doing to save this club. And that is everything that I was told we were getting with this guy. And it just makes me more and more frustrated, because if these were the results we were going to get, why did we make a change at all?
The Müller to Bredlow thing, I think, was overdue and was obvious. I won't put that on him as a panic move. A lot of times you would classify a goalie switch as a panic move. I think this was just it's time. This experiment has failed. The thing I've been really frustrated with Bruno on is that everybody said exactly what you said, the defensive stability. And we are worse defensively today than we were 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't, the changes that he's made, going from a back three to a back four, okay. But then trying Anton out at right back, that is not defensive stability. That's trying an experiment to see if you can get some offense out of a guy who doesn't normally generate offense, which, okay, we have no offense either. But what I was expecting from Bruno was we're going to give up fewer dumb goals. We're not giving up fewer dumb goals yet. So it doesn't matter what we do offensively. If we're giving up 2 dumb goals every game, we're not going to win.
No, I'd almost rather he would have just said, you know what, the heck with it. I'm going to start Zagadou, Dino, Anton, Ito, Endo, Carrizor, Nardi, every possible defensive player we have, and then we're just going to try to counter all day long and put Silas up front. And that goes with my offense, is that the reason why I thought the lineup was a bad lineup against Schalke is I was thinking about this after you mentioned last episode that you weren't sure how we could break down a Schalke team. And I said, I was like, well, I don't think they're going to be able to counter us. And I was wrong. They countered us for 2 goals. I think Silas playing up front against a team that is going to pack the box was a terrible idea. Now, in Bruno's defense, well, who else are you going to put up front that's a target guy who's a big guy? Okay, that's fair. We probably would have lost our mind. Yeah, if you would put Luca Pfeiffer up there, we all probably would have lost our mind. But Silas played way better on the right than he did up front against this team that was packing the box. And it's not like the Schalke defense is amazing. Yeah, they've stabilized things. So there's no defensive stability. There's no offensive game plan. This is, let's face it, one win in seven matches. We joked about it. I don't think the club has the money or the ego to move on from Bruno. And I don't even know if that's a good decision at this point. I mean, at some point, you've got to stick with some system. And you mentioned a couple episodes ago, is like this, Bruno said this is going to take 3 or 4 weeks. I'm just hearing a lot of excuses. I'm not seeing a lot of results. And I'm seeing exactly what you said. The same exact mistakes I saw in August, September, and October, I'm seeing in January and February.
It's feeling more like the switch from Matarazzo to Bruno was so Varela could say, I'm in charge now. Look at me, I'm the captain. And that's not a good reason to make those types of decisions. We're not seeing any improvement. We're having the same issues, and arguably they've gotten worse. I will not advocate for Bruno getting canned right now. You and I have been talking about this stuff long enough that, you know, I immediately default to the "and then who" argument of this. And stability is important, and you can't grow a system, you can't grow a culture at a club if you're firing the coach every 6 weeks. It's a recipe for disaster. So if we were to get rid of Bruno, then who is question one I have. And we can't afford it either, as you said. So I think we're stuck. We're all stuck together for a little while. We have to hope, and hope is not a strategy, but we have to hope that Bruno's got a plan, and it's just taken longer to come together than he thought it would, and that the growing pains are going to look rougher than we had hoped for. And maybe in 3 or 4 weeks, we're back to Cologne mode, going, oh man, isn't this great? I'm not feeling it today, but maybe.
You brought up money. So we talk about Volgamut real quick. So the rumors were that he turned down a $15 million deal for Dino to a club. I can't remember where he was going to go. And it was confirmed that we turned down a deal for Borna Sosa to Bayer Leverkusen for $10 million, which is a crazy low amount of money, I thought, but maybe we overvalue this guy. It's tough because Volgamut is in a tough spot where he was hired after Bruno was hired, and the coffers are relatively empty. Whether he brought in Diaz or Haraguchi, or those were already Sven transfers in the works. The Diaz one is rumored to be more Sven. The Haraguchi is rumored to be more Volgamut. I don't know. I mean, I don't have anything super bad cock to say about Volgamut, because I almost feel like he's just a pawn in the chess game that's going on right now. And I think the guy that we really should talk about right now is Varel. So his job is to set this team up for results. The results haven't been there. His job is to help with stability. There's been no stability. The thing I think he should have done, and I'm not alone in this, is that if he truly thought that Reno wasn't a good manager and that Sven Mislintat had too much power and did not set up this club with quality players, we should have fired them in June. We just should have cut the cord.
Yeah.
Everybody would have been upset. Everybody would have been up in arms. But guess what? Everybody's upset now, and everybody's up in arms now. And if that's truly what you believed, we should have just done it during the summer when we could have prepped, planned, and gotten the squad ready for whatever we were going to do, you know, in the meantime. And so I'm not a big believer in saying that things start at the top. I do think there's a lot of bottom up that plays a big role in this. He's not helping.
No, and I think with sports teams, a lot of the time it's middle out, right? So you get the sporting director has as a, and the GM is the term we use here in the US for a lot. There's a lot of control about who goes, who stays, what the contracts look like and all that, and what the tenor of the organization is. They can set a lot of that. But if the players aren't buying it, it doesn't matter. And the players have a unique power that I don't know if they always realize, but when you bring in a new sporting director, when you bring in a new coach, you can't fire the whole team. You just can't. So when there's a big problem, well, I can't fire the whole team. I can fire the coach, or I can fire this assistant. I can fire the guy responsible for the power play. Those are people you can get rid of as symbolic moves about this is a problem and we're going to fix it. And you're never going to just drop the whole roster tomorrow. But it is, you're right. If they were going to move on, if they knew they were going to move on from Reno, I think it would have made more sense to do it earlier. Let's, you know, rip the band-aid off and get this over with. But I'm feeling a lot like this is a team without a plan. And then there's a lot of people who make a lot more money than you and I do, swinging bags around and trying to assert their dominance and pee on their particular patch of grass. And the whole organization is worse off for it.
It's crazy where we're at now compared to where we were at just really about 12 to 14 months ago. And so we'll wrap up this segment with talking about Klaus Vogt, who I like talking about this because if you want to get into the inner workings of club politics, we are probably the two worst people on the planet to talk to when it comes to what's happening there.
100%.
But it's funny, Klaus Vogt was brought in for transparency and stability. And whether it's his fault or it's not, there's none of that right now. And I can't sit here and tell you who's going to be president of this club when there's the elections coming up next summer slash fall. Klaus is in trouble. I just, at the end of the day, Alex Verrill's quote was 100% accurate. It's results that matter. If things continue on this trajectory, everybody's in trouble. And I feel bad for Klaus Vogt because he's got a job somewhere else. He does something else and he does this. But his job is to kind of set the plan and hopefully set up some stability. And it's just been nuts and crazy. And he seems like a great guy and he's willing to talk to people if you want to talk to him. But man, oh man, is it just bad right now? And it's, right or wrong, it's under his flag, his leadership.
His job with the club is, as you said, to set people up for success. And like, that's my job where I work. I have a team of people who rely on me to put them in positions to be successful. And if I suck at it, there's not much they can do to cover up for the fact that I'm bad at what I do. And if Vogt can't set this team up for success or can't put people in place who can do that, he shouldn't be in that role anymore.
Yeah, it's rough. And we'll wrap up here with the season. There's 12 matches left in the season, Matt. So March is Bayern Munich, Frankfurt, and Wolfsburg. Then we've got the international break. April, we've got Union, the Pokal game. And then we got Bochum, then Dortmund, Augsburg, and Gladbach, who is great, frustrating. And then the season wraps up with Hertha, Leverkusen, Mainz, and ironically, Hoffenheim. March is going to be brutal. March is going to be rough. I'm going to do the question right now is, do you think we'll gain a point in the month of March? One of the OFC members asked that. I'll say yes, just to try to be positive, but it's going to be rough, man. Bayern, Frankfurt, Wolfsburg, whew. What are your plans in the month of March?
Well, I'm leaving the country to make it hard to watch the games. I do hope I've got a buddy who's new to Bundesliga fandom. His son is getting into soccer hardcore. And so their adopted team in the Bundesliga is Wolfsburg. And so we've been talking a lot about the differences in the teams, and I helped him come to Wolfsburg. That's where his family came from. Like, our families came from Baden-Württemberg. So I hope to watch the game on the 18th with my friend Drew. And the last time I had a chance to do something like that was with my friend Felix, who's a Dortmund supporter. And Felix was talking a bunch of crap. And we went to a bar and we watched a game. And that was a game Stuttgart beat Dortmund like 4-1.
Nice.
And it was great. So I can see, I think Bayern's going to curb stomp us because I think they're in angry mode right now.
Yeah.
I don't think we're good enough to put up a fight against Frankfurt. But Wolfsburg seems like a team that we might surprise and sucker punch. And since I'm watching with my buddy, I think it might happen.
I like the fact that you hang out with your friends and it's all about Schadenfreude and hoping for the worst. Everything like that. It's like we're friends here too.
I'm not a good person, Travis.
You know what? Speaking of something that might not be too good, do you want to run into predictions for the upcoming match?
Pain.
This is that weird match where you're like, you know what, honey, if you want to take the kids to the Children's Museum, I'm all in on that. We're playing Bayern Munich at home. God bless the club. They're doing everything they can to try to get as many tickets and people to show up to this one as possible. They only beat up the second place team, you know, 3-0. We played them 123 times. We have 21 wins, which is a pretty great percentage, I suppose. We're 0 wins, 2 draws, and 7 losses in the last 9. But in the last 2, we have 2 draws. And Saverio De Rossi had that great penalty kick the last time. So that's the match. I'm not even going to – I didn't even look up the spread on this one. I'm guessing it's a goal and a half. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts going into this? And I think this is one of those matches where it's actually more about what happens after this match. Borna Sosa is not going to play, so you're going to get, you know, somebody else to play left back. What are your expectations going into this results wise? But what are you, I guess, hoping to see during the match, but also maybe leapfrogging forward?
I'm hoping to see a defensive structure that makes sense given the opponent. So we should expect Bayern to come at us hard. Can we create a defensive shell that will give us a chance to only get punched in the face once or twice? There's always the chance. Bayern's been so weird this year and so up and down that bad Bayern could show up and just completely sleepwalk through this game, and we have a chance. I think they're in full Death Star mode right now, and we're doomed. But if we can not look like a bunch of beer league jerks out there for the afternoon, I will take that as a victory.
What's a little bit crazy for us, it's going to be tough to avoid because this is the nationally televised afternoon match that will be on 12:30, so it'll be everywhere.
So what you're saying is everybody's going to know how bad the team that we love is.
Yeah. Well, the guys that I play tennis with, you know, I was wearing a Stuttgart jersey the other night. And so they all decided to watch on ESPN Plus, and I had to turn my notifications off because they're like, dude, your team is as good as you play tennis. And well, I was like, ouch, that hurts. So we've got Bochum is hosting Schalke on Saturday. Augsburg is hosting Bremen. That Bochum-Schalke match is huge, really, for us. It's a team that is 19 points with us, and Schalke is 3 points behind us. Sunday, you've got Hertha traveling to Leverkusen. It's just we're in this really weird, bad spot that I hate being in. We are more looking at the results around the league than we are our own results, because we're in this weird situation. And we were here last year where we don't control our destiny, it seems like. And I know that's stupid because there's still 12 matches left. But when you're facing Bayern Munich, you're like, yeah, I don't control my destiny. Right? So any of those matches, so you got Bochum, Schalke, you got Augsburg, Bremen, you got Leverkusen, Hertha, that you're going to be paying attention to more than the other?
I think the Augsburg-Bremen game is the most interesting one, because those are two teams that we should be competing with. That's our wheelhouse. And so to see how they do, and is Augsburg going to be able to pull away from us more? Bochum Schalke, I mean, you got to root for the asteroid and just hope that nobody gets any points out of that. I guess the ideal scenario is Schalke wins, and then we've got a four-way tie at 19 points for last. But it would almost be better if they both got, if there was a draw and Bochum pulls 1 point ahead of us and Schalke stays deep down in the basement.
Right.
I don't know. Looking at the schedule, it's tough to see where we feel good about picking up points. So we've got to hope for bad things to happen to the teams around us.
It's crazy. It's like, I firmly believe if we can just stay within touching distance of all the clubs around us after March, I think we have a chance, because I think March is going to be brutal for us. And I think a lot of these other clubs have games against direct competitors that could get them out of danger, or at least a little bit further danger. Whereas I think on paper, you look at our schedule, that's 0 out of 9 points. So I think if we can just somehow get a little bit of luck, which has been few and far between, and get those other clubs around us to not distance themselves from us, I think going into April and May, we get back into a schedule where you're like, okay, that's a loss, but this is a game we can get points. Okay, that's a loss, but that's a game we can point. So that's my hope. My whole hope with March is Schadenfreude. I'm just going to be looking at other clubs, and I'm going to be watching their matches and, you know, hopefully see some results that go our way, because, you know, we need some help. But, you know, we want to end this on a positive tone. And the positive tone is that website that you love, 538, has us still finishing in 15th place.
They're so never wrong.
They're never wrong. So they got their numbers experts. Despite Schalke beating us this week, they're still a dumpster fire. Bochum is a dumpster fire. You know, Hertha got that win against Augsburg, but Hertha and Augsburg aren't that great. So we're right in that same boat that we've been in, you know, for a while. And as bad as things are, and honestly, we shouldn't be that surprised, because Matt, you and I have been supporters of this club for a while. I mean, in our heart of hearts, we kind of knew that Schalke match was coming. We still have a puncher's chance of figuring this out. And if Bruno's words are correct, that it's going to take him 4, 5, 6 weeks to implement his system. Okay, after March, we're past that point. So whatever that system is, hopefully has been implemented. And he claims, listen, Borna Sosa came out and said, Bruno Labbadia is the best coach I've ever had. Bruno said, these guys want to play a 4-4, you know, 2-4-1-4-1. Maybe it's just going to take getting through that tunnel that is March. And then once we hit into April, you know, results will start to turn our way a little bit. Is that making you feel any more positive, or are you just glad you're leaving the country?
Well, I'm fond of a line I steal from my favorite Detroit Red Wings blog of hope is not a strategy. And so I am hopeful that Bruno's system will kick in and things will get better, but hope is not a legit strategy. So I'm counting on Bruno and company to have a legit strategy. I hope that we use the Bayern game as an opportunity to get some guys playing time that haven't had playing time, to, you know, say, you look, you've been learning this, you've been working on it in practice, go out there and show me how you do it on the field. Even if the results aren't great, that should be a learning opportunity for those guys. And I'm with you. I can see how after March, how we've got a chance to pick up some points, and we could be I'd be shocked if we made it above 13, but we could be safe, and safe would be nice. It'd be a positive change for this year. So I'm hopeful we're at the end of the Bruno learning cycle, and just last weekend was a bit of a speed bump and some all the wrong people having bad days at the same time.
It is interesting because this Bayern match does give Bruno a chance to say, you're going to sit because I'm going to show you something. And also, sidebar, I know we're going to lose, so I'm going to play, you know, Chestnut McCaw or whoever into the match. You know what? I do want to leave on this positive note. Did you see the diversity kit that the club is going to put out for the Wolfsburg match?
I am angry about it because that kit looks so freaking good that this team is going to separate me from another $80 because I know I'm going to get the text from you. Hey, buddy, I'm putting in an order. Do you want anything? And the answer should be no. Screw these jerks. They're breaking my heart. And instead, I'm going to say, yes, I want one of those awesome rainbow jerseys because they look amazing.
I already have it saved in my notes. Hey, Matt, Rob, Doug, you guys. It does.
The Jocko guys, as skeptical as we were privately when it was announced that we were going from Puma to Jocko, and like, who the heck are these guys? And thanks our buddy Adrian let us in on who these folks were. I was still super skeptical. They have done a really, really nice job for us.
They have knocked it out of the park. I mean, let's face it. We love the club, so we love the red stripe, and everybody else is totally. Like, it's the same jersey every year. But you and I are like, but it's different. Let me show you the difference. They put the city in it. They put the map in it. I mean, come on, that black and red one. And now they do this. So yeah, Jocko, hats off to you guys. It's God, getting a victory in one of those special jerseys they wear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be ideal for sure. Especially
since it's just a little bit sweeter.
Yes. $700 shipping them all over here. Well, it's not a big deal. I mean, we both, you know, this, as my wife found out when we bought this microphone, by the way, the microphone, I don't know if it sounds any better, but she's like, wait, you paid what for the microphone? I was like $50. She's like, so when do we get a check for the podcast? I was like, well, honey, I gotta go.
It's a labor of love, dear.
That's right. It's a labor of something. Well, all right, Matt, thanks so much for joining us this week. Hopefully, you know what? When you return from your whirlwind trip trying to find Valve Bischugart a striker, a plan, a goal of some kind, we've got some results on the board. So when you come back to the States, you can give your buddy, the Wolfsburg fan, a hard time because we finally got a win.
I am keeping my fingers firmly crossed.
All right, Matt, enjoy your travels and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Travis. Talk to you soon.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the last segment of this episode. Thanks to Matt for joining us earlier, but we're going to do some league-wide predictions of the entire match day that is coming up. And we thought, who better to join us than the guy who is leading our prediction wagers for the entire second half of the season. He's got 29 wins to just 33 losses, so he is in first place as the second half of the season is going on. Jeff, you're replacing Austin, who's in last place. We gave him the boot. We kicked him off. How you been? It's been a long time since we've had you on.
I've been doing good. It's nice to hear that Austin is in the relegation zone for the podcast, and I've worked my way back in it. So been doing pretty well, though.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, it's you know, between Matt leaving the country and his important tech job and my obviously important job educating the youth, and Austin's important job of delivering packages to people. It's good that we found the one guy whose job really isn't important enough to, you know, as a nurse to do anything. So I'm glad you can take time out of your not so busy schedule. You know, we haven't heard from you since I think August. Is that correct?
I think August sounds about right. And from what I understand is the ratings have been taking a pretty big hit since about then. So you're going to see quite a big spike after this episode launches.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I wonder if we'll get double digits after this. We'll see.
Here's hoping.
Yeah. Here's going. So we're going to start off with just a league-wide look at the matches coming up and see what your thoughts are as you are the prediction machine so far. So we've got Friday night. We've got Dortmund hosting Leipzig, second place versus fourth place. Dortmund's coming off a really narrow 1-0 win. Leipzig is also coming off a win themselves. Who do you see taking this one?
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting matchup. I think both of these teams are, you know, it's so bunched up at the top. They're definitely shooting not only for the top four, but they also could win the league. I'm going to take only because is it at Dortmund?
It is at Dortmund.
I'm going to just take Dortmund only because they're at home. I think that's about the only thing I'm going to do. Otherwise, they don't look that impressive this year for a second place team, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I watched.
Got to give them some home field advantage. So.
Yeah, I watched almost the entire Dortmund Hoffenheim match for personal reasons, and they did everything they could to give Hoffenheim back that match. Dortmund's just a weird club. They seem to play up and down to their competition, so this should be a good one. I agree with you on this one. It's Leipzig plus half a goal. I'll take Dortmund minus half. Saturday, we've got Augsburg, who is in 13th place, hosting number 9, Bremen. They are getting half a goal, Bremen is. This is a weird match because Bremen started off really strong and has kind of come back to earth a little bit, but they just destroyed Bochum 3-0. Augsburg is Augsburg. You and I both agree they're never going to get relegated, but they just lost to Hertha Berlin. All right, Augsburg is the favorite. They're at home. What are you thinking?
So it's Augsburg plus 0.5.
No, minus 0.5.
Oh, minus 0.5. Then I'm going to have to take it because it's going to be a draw because Augsburg has to finish in 13th. So I'm going to take Bremen with the half goal. That kind of surprises me. I think, you know, Augsburg, it could be hot 1 week and then terrible the next. But it's hard to ignore the half a goal that Bremen's getting. So I'm going to take Bremen in that one.
Yeah, I'm going to go opposite with you. I'm going to go Augsburg. They seem to play well at home and nowhere else, and this one's at home. So I agree with you. It's going to be a close one. Who knows what's going to happen, but I'll take Augsburg in this one. Then we've got really the biggest match of the entire universe, I think. 17th place Bochum is hosting 18th place Schalke. Bochum's got 19 points. Schalke now has 16 points, thanks to Stuttgart. Bochum just lost. Schalke just won. This is going to be a rough one. It's going to be a big one. Schalke is the underdog by half a goal on the road. Who do you see taking this one?
You know, it's funny to say this. At this point, it's hard not to take Schalke in this game. I think that Bochum is probably in the worst form of the league. And I think Schalke has got, five or six games now without a loss. You know, I think it was what, 5 draws in the victory last week. So I'm going to take Schalke. They seem to be kind of climbing back into it. They've got some momentum, so to speak. I think Bochum's at minus 30, which is even worse than Schalke. So I'm going to take Schalke getting the half a goal.
It's weird that Schalke seems to have figured out how to at least play defense.
Yeah.
You can string draws together. You can get points. You get points. You can stay in the league. And Bochum seems to be wavering a bit. So I'm 100% with you on that one. It's going to be awesome because, as Matt said in the earlier segment, we're going to have like 17 teams tied in 17th place with 19 points apiece. So this will just be super dramatic. The match that I don't really care too much about, but Freiburg's only 1 point out of Champions League contention. Gladbach, who has been just a completely weird team, they are hosting Freiburg. It's a pick 'em. Gladbach is 10th. Freiburg is 5th. Gladbach, I can't figure out. I'm going to go Freiburg in this one. They seem to play well on the road. What do you think?
You know, I watched part of that Freiburg game this weekend. They did not look – they got a draw, but they didn't deserve it, I don't think. But they're also up and down. And I think with Mönchengladbach, you said they're playing, they're all over the place. I can't seem to figure that out. I think Freiburg is a better team. So I'm going to go with Freiburg this weekend.
What about Mainz, who is in 8th place for some God-known reason, versus Hoffenheim, Our old friend Pellegrino Monterazzo is 0-3 as their head coach. Only Hoffenheim coach in their club's history to start 0-3 in the Bundesliga. They're 16th. They got 19 points. Mainz, 8th. Hoffenheim, 16th. Hoffenheim's the underdog by half a goal.
You know, I look at the table, and I always want to think that Mainz is in the top four. Every time I look, they seem to win these games they shouldn't be winning, and they're number 8. I cannot tell you why. But Hoffenheim is struggling right now, and I think until they can prove that they're going to turn it around a little bit. I think they've had 3 games with Mata. Usually that's about the time it takes to kind of get, you know, get the flow going and get the game set planned. I think that Mainz at this point is just going to be too tough. I want to see Hoffenheim do something first. So I'm going to take Mainz minus the points with this one.
Yeah, Mainz has got 4 wins in their last 5. Hoffenheim's got 0 wins in their last 5. So it looks like it's Mainz, which means that Hoffenheim will win 37-0 in this one.
Most likely.
Union Berlin, who just got their doors blown off. They're in 3rd place, 3 points behind the league leaders. They're hosting your beloved Billy Goats, Cologne, who are in 12th place. Cologne is weird. They've lost 2 in a row after that fast start and that really great start to 2023. But they're safe and in 12th place with 26 points, right? Right?
No. And Union is not happy right now. Like I said, they're playing that game to get sole possession of first place. Now, do they deserve first place? No, they don't. But they're a better team than Cologne. And Cologne looks awful. I think just next to maybe Bochum, they're probably in the worst form. They look terrible the last couple of games. I mean, credit to Stuttgart in that game a couple of weeks ago. They were by far the better team. But I don't know who's going to score any goals. They can't. You know, they're not going to be able to let up probably anything less than 2 or 3 goals at Union. So I think it's going to be a blowout. I'm taking Union in the easy win.
Yeah, I pick Union too because it's at home. They seem to play really well at home. Cologne seems to be just scruffing a bit. They had that really nice start. I think they're fine. I think they're safe. There's just so much garbage underneath them that if they get 3-4 more points, I think set the sails to next season, they're going to be fine. The team that's not fine is Stuttgart. They are in 15th place, hosting that little plucky club called Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich is minus 1.5 goals. They've got 46 points. I can only dream of getting 46 points, maybe this season and next season. Matt and I are both super unoptimistic about this. Now's your chance to make us happy. Talk us up.
I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm sure that you and Matt have talked about this a lot. On this very podcast, but Stuttgart, you know, I want to be positive. I think they play hard. They play hard with Mata, with Wimmer, and now with Bruno. I don't feel like they're not putting the effort. They're just not a good club. And I can't figure out, you know, we've wagered on this 1,000 times. I don't see them being a bottom of the league team, but they always seem to find themselves down there. So to answer your question, minus a goal and a half after, you know, Bayern just blew out Union, I'm going to take the pretty safe bet here and take Bayern minus a goal and a half.
Shocking.
It is shocking. You know, like I told you, I said, I think that Sosa's got some of the best crosses I have ever seen consistently. And you said, yeah, they're great, but he's not crossing it to anybody. And so until they can find someone who can finish consistently, they're in trouble. And it's not going to get any better this weekend.
Yeah.
They're going to have to wait another couple of weeks, I think.
I think so, too. I think the month of March is going to be pretty rough for the old Stuttgart faithful here. So we got the Sunday matches. One of these matches matters for both of our clubs. You got Bayer Leverkusen, who, like Gladbach's been a little bit all over the place. They're in 11th place, only 28 points, which in most seasons would be pretty bad. But this season, because of, you know, what's going on beneath them, they seem to be okay. They are going to host Hertha, who got that big 2-goal win over Augsburg. Hertha's in 14th. They've only got 20 points. They're only 1 point above Stuttgart. They're getting 1 goal in this one. It's Bayer at home hosting Hertha.
I'm going to take Bayer just because I like the fact, as Matt alluded to, that there's going to be about 17 teams at around 19, 20 points. after, you know, match day, what, 23. So although I do think Berlin's starting to play a little bit better, I just don't think they're going to have a chance against Bayer on the road. So I'm going to take Bayer minus the goal on this one.
Yeah, I'm going Hertha on this one because I don't know if they're going to win, but I think they'll keep it close. It just seems like the teams that are at the bottom are starting to play some defense outside of Bochum and Stuttgart. So I can see them keeping this a little bit close. And the last, you know, big game that Hertha won, they beat Gladbach, which is a weird team, just like Bayer Leverkusen. They almost seem to be the same team. You don't know what you're going to get. So I'll take them in to cover. I don't think they'll win, but I do take them in the cover here, which gets us to our last match of the day, probably the most boring match of Sunday. Seventh place Wolfsburg is hosting sixth place Frankfurt. It's a pick 'em. Two of the safest clubs around. What it must be like to be one of those teams right now. No clue how this one's going to go. What do you think?
Does anybody care?
I know.
I mean, honestly, like I said, they're not going to make Champions League. They may make the Euro. They're going to be safe. This is the most non-watchable game, I think, out there. Who's at home again? You said Wolfsburg at home?
Wolfsburg at home. I mean, Wolfsburg's in seventh place. They're 5 points out of six. So the way it goes, yeah, is fifth and sixth place, most likely get Europa League. Sixth, yeah, gets that Conference League game, depending on how the Pokal finishes up. So Frankfurt, I think, has got a little bit more to play for than Wolfsburg. But
yeah,
I'm with you.
I'm going to be pretty generic with this one. I think that since it's a pick'em, I'm just going to take the home team and the pick'em if it's six versus seven. It's a pretty generic way to determine who's going to win. But like I said, I don't think anybody even cares about this. I don't think Wolfsburg's fan even cares about Wolfsburg. I mean,
I'll take Frankfurt just, I don't know, to make it interesting.
You're trying to catch up. That's why.
No, yeah, I have no reason to take them. They've got a couple better results over the last five than Wolfsburg do, but it's, like you said, pretty much bleh here. Well, yeah, that is the wrap up for the next match day that is coming up here for match day 23. Jeff, any last words before we celebrate your return to the podcast, or we don't talk?
Yeah, I think, well, it's good to be back. I'm happy to be back on the podcast. I have kind of missed the podcast, missed doing it, but I'm working on a disability that'll get me out, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. I got to talk to Austin about that, see how he can swing it. So I can hopefully pod, you know, into the rest of the season, towards the end of the season. So
yeah, it's definitely priorities. And you've got to get them in order, my friend.
Well, that's gonna go in my paperwork too. So
that'll be on. If you can be anything like Austin and get your 10th or 11th write up for discipline issues,
what's it gonna take to be let go?
You could be on the pod too. All right, Jeff, thanks so much for giving us your insight into these matches. If you're anything like Austin, you will go 2-7 this week and it'll go back down to earth a little bit. But hopefully, we'll talk to you next week for more predictions with Jeff. And you know what? Have a good one, man.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Travis.